Every year, football fans pull up the Raising Cane's drive-thru, game day ready.
Chicken, 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 which combo are you picking?
Can I get a two-box extra sauce and toast? Hydrated, Idaho, tailgate to go.
So that's two-box combos with extra cane sauce and Texas toast, crinkle-cut fries with two first-squeeze lemonades, and a 25-finger tailgate?
You nailed it!
Raising Cane's Chicken Fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is your tailgate headquarters. Go Cowboys!
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back Nine Report. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres every week. I'm alongside my co-host Fred Alfredo Pat. This week, you know, it's President's Cup. So another major event is coming on, so we need reinforcements, as usual. Thanks, Kieran Clark, the European golf guru, is here with us, our friend and colleague. How are you, Kieran?
Well, I'm very well, Carlos. Thank you for having me on the show, as always. It's always fun to come on a kind of nice late night here in St. Andrews. It's 1 o'clock in the morning, and it's Tuesday, now Wednesday morning here, so I'm staying awake for you guys. And I have to say, you mentioned the President's Cup, and tell you something, I think we actually care about the President's Cup more than anyone else does, because no one else is talking about it. it's a non event, but it's quite good fun, so we may as well talk about the President's Cup. And of course, Carlos, you know my favourite event of the year, my favourite topic is the FedEx Cup. So I'm looking forward to talking a little bit about that too.
We know, and that's why we have you here. I mean, the FedEx Cup is, it's ended already, so who better to talk about it than you? You know, you have a lot to talk about that. But hey, let's keep it a little bit for a little later. But Fred Alvader, hi, how are you this week?
I'm fantastic, Carlos. Hey, Kieran. We have had unseasonably warm weather here in northern United States for the past week, and it was perfect for getting out and chasing a few golf balls. The leaves are just beginning to turn, and the prediction is for cooler temperatures beginning later this week, so maybe the fall is going to get here. Carlos, we want to take a minute to shout out to anyone. I know we have fans in Puerto Rico. You're from there. You have family there that you're concerned about, still fighting the fact of the last hurricane that went through. There's not a lot of electricity down there, so we want to keep thinking about them. But we got a show to do, and so Carlos, we're going to talk tonight about a rookie won the tour championship, but the player of the year, Justin Thomas, got the big check. Ho-hum, Bernard Langer won again. That's a big surprise. We have a President's Cup to talk about this week. Plus, we are so honored to once again have our good friend, Kieran Clark, in the house. Let's go!
Let's go. And yes, like you said, I want to extend my thoughts and prayers to all my friends and family there in Puerto Rico. They're really having a real tough time there. So, I mean, I still haven't heard from my mom, from an uncle, an aunt, and some other family. So that's how we have 5 million Puerto Ricans outside of the island. There's 3.5 in there. And most of us haven't heard about family in there. So any news, please contact us. You know, let us know, all of us that are outside. But hey, like you said, we have a show to do. And we had the FedEx Cup that ended. Like you said, Justin Thomas won it. And I am going to talk about a little bit about the winner later, because you know I have to. I mention him. But hey, let's talk. Let's say what happened there in the PGA Tour, the Tour Championship.
Well, I'll tell you what. Golf fans got a twofer this week. They were not only able to watch a champion crowned in the season-ending Tour Championship, but the drama was also increased when Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas vying for the $10 million FedEx Cup right there on the back nine. All of the focus prior to the Tour Championship had been centered on Spieth and Thomas, numbers one and numbers two in the FedEx Cup, where they battled down the wire for the $10 million. They did put on a good show on Thursday, firing a pair of 3-under par 67s when they were paired together. But Spieth could only manage even par 70 on Friday and a 1-under 69 on Saturday to fall 8 shots behind the leader Paul Casey at the beginning of the final round on Sunday. Meanwhile, Thomas fired a solid minus four, 66 on Friday, but had to be satisfied with an even par 70 on Saturday and dropped from a tie for first to trail Casey by five shots, and he was tied for fourth to begin the final round. The other big name heading into the week, Dustin Johnson, posted scores of 68, 69, 69, but could only manage a 72 on Sunday and finish tied for 11th with Jason Day. Both Kevin Kisner with a 64 and Xander Schauffele, who fired a 65 on Saturday, put their names in the hat for the FedEx Cup. They were tied for second, just two shots behind Casey after the third round. Rookie Schauffele capped off a magical season with the win at the Tour Championship. After missing four consecutive cuts in December and January, the rookie was very consistent for the rest of the year. His T5 at the U.S. Open and win just a couple of weeks later at the Greenbrier signaled that his rookie season was something that we needed to keep an eye on. And Carlos has been doing just that and predicted big things for this youngster from San Diego all year. I just have one question. Who names their kid Xander? Where did that name come from? What is wrong with Bill or Bob or Tom? Well, anyhow, Schauffele was even par on the front nine on Sunday, but when he rolled in his second birdie on the backside, his 2-under par 68 was good enough to beat Justin Thomas by a single shot and claim the $1.9 million. Give him his second PGA Tour win of the season and bring his earnings for the year to $4.3 million. Good enough for a three-year exemption and third spot on the 2017 FedEx Cup. Not too bad for someone who won't reach 24 until the end of October. Kisner turned the front nine at 1-under. Kevin Kisner was a factor during the tournament and battled all day, but bogeys at numbers 10 and 11 put him behind the eight ball. When he dunked his ball in the water at number 15, his challenge for the he ended up with T3 with Russell Henley, who moved up 14 shots by firing a wonderful 5-under par 65 for the best round of the day. 54-hole leader Paul Casey continued his struggles in final rounds with a 3-over par 73 and fell to fifth. Brooks Koepka rounded out a fine year to finish solo sixth, and Spieth ended up tied for seventh with Jon Rahm and Tony Finau. Another couple of young guys that will be heard of for a while down the for quite a while on the PGA Tour. Thomas came up one short, but he won the $10 million FedEx Cup. Spieth gave a run, but poor rounds on Friday and Saturday left him too far back. Even his final round, 3-under par 67, just wasn't quite enough. Eastlake did not yield too many low rounds. I have a new appreciation for that course. The more I watched on Sunday, the more I saw pieces of Augusta National in there. Guys, I'm interested to hear what your take is on the Tour Championship.
Well, about Xander, that's short for Alexander. So just so you know. But I'll talk a little bit more about him. And I know that Kieran is dying to talk. I'm just going to sit back and enjoy. And, I mean, if it's past the hour, I'll just mute him. But, Kieran, the microphone is all yours.
Well, thank you, Carlos. I'm just having a little warm-up here. I'm standing in front of the mirror, punching the mirror. I'm ready for I've got the Rocky Balboa music on in the background. I'm also talking about the FedEx Cup and the Tour Championship. So, on the good side of things, I have to agree with Fred and Xander Schauffele, which is a wonderful name, Schauffele. I hope he continues to be successful because I love the name. I love saying it. I just can't spell it, which is a bad thing for a writer. However, he's a very good player, and he was very impressive. Even though he somehow almost missed that putt in the last hole, you know, from about 2.5 feet, and it rolled all around the hole and then was back in, so he was very lucky there, but yeah, a fantastic year for him. But in terms of the event itself, it was obviously entertaining, it's close, there was a lot of guys in contention on the back nine, and that's always fun to watch. Obviously, we had Kisner up there too, you know, Paul Casey fell away, but you had players in contention. So Schauffele is obviously part of this new kind of young breed of player. And kind of it's indicative of the way the PGA Tour is now as a whole, particularly with American players, where there's so many young guys coming onto the tour all the time. And there's a couple of stats I saw on Twitter that kind of emphasized this from Justin Ray, who is the Golf Channel's stat guy. You should go and follow him. He's got some amazing little bits of information. And according to Justin, since 1980, there have been two PGA Tour seasons where there were six or more different winners under the age of 25, and both of those seasons were in the last 2 years. There were seven winners under 25 last year, and there were 10 winners under the age of 25 in this past season on the PGA Tour. And our stat here, from 2003 through 2011, there were 17 PGA Tour events won by players aged 24 or younger. And this past season, there were 18 in 1 year. And again, underlines that the game is getting really young now. It's becoming almost like the LPGA, where it's like all these youngsters that come out of college, they come out of, you know, elite amateur system, they come straight onto the tour, and they're almost proven winners already. They're fearless. And, you know, the likes of Schofield are proving that. Obviously, Justin Thomas has now become a major star, a major champion. What a year he's had. And obviously, the FedEx Cup's an added bonus. In terms of the whole FedEx Cup, you know, shenanigans and nonsense, I know, Fred says it was dramatic with, obviously, with Spieth being in there and Justin Thomas being involved. But I found it just a total farce. I think in the end, it was so hard to follow. When something has to tell you, every 5 minutes on the broadcast, they have to tell you, oh, Steve Smith projected number one. Well, now it's Justin. Now it's Jordan. Oh, if he wins here, he finishes down here. He finishes over there. If some guy falls off over here, he wins what? It became so complicated. And it's, and again, it, for something that no one cares about, and I keep saying this, no one cares about FedEx Cup. Nobody does. Yeah. He asked the most ardent golf fan, tell me who's won the FedEx Cup in the last 10 years, and they would have no chance of naming them all. No one would, because no one cares. In the end, it doesn't matter, because in the end, and I keep saying it, it's about rich guys getting richer. It's like watching Bill Gates playing Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. It's not very interesting. And Justin Thomas wins $10 million. Oh, that's great. Is it going to change his life? No, not really. He's already a multimillionaire. But what will matter for Justin Thomas is the fact he's the winner of the PGA Championship, because the trophy there matters, the title matters. That's what sports fans, we watch events. When Jordan Spieth won the Open Championship at Birkdale, we didn't think, oh, he's won $2 million. We thought he'd won the Claret Jug. Or Sergio at the Masters, he won the Green Jacket. Those events matter because of the trophy. It has prestige. It means something. The FedEx Cup is soulless and empty. And I know we're going to talk about the point system but just right now, just the whole concept of it, I still find just, you know, mind-numbingly uninteresting. And I don't think it registers with anybody altogether. And actually, the fact that Jordan Spieth very nearly won the whole thing, having not won any of the playoff events, surely must raise questions about the whole system, because he felt almost like a fraud in potentially winning the whole thing without winning any of these playoff events. The system has to change. It has to be simplified, because right now it's too complicated. And in the end, when something's about points and projections and this mathematics, you know, it just didn't connect to people. However, took nothing away from Justin Thomas. He had an incredible year. If anyone deserved to win the FedEx Cup, it was certainly him. But I think the whole thing is a bit of a farce. For Xander Schofield, you know, great win for him, Carlos, and he's certainly a player to watch going forward, because he's now a proven winner with two titles this year. So overall, the Tour Championship was good viewing, but I just don't think the FedEx Cup and the whole, you know, thing connects with anybody on any deep level. I don't think so anyway.
Yeah, I have to agree, Kieran. I mean, I only watched because it was Xander there at the end competing for it, but I really can't, and I think I express this for a lot of the people that I talk to about this finals. It's like, so what would it take for number 10 to win? Well, apart from the planets aligning and trying to get a doctor's degree in mathematics, that's what it would take for number 10 or number 30 to, for that matter, to know what it will take for them to win. I mean, no one in their right mind can be calculating all that. And I understand what they were doing. Hey, now it's Jordan. No, now it's Justin. Okay, they're trying to create some drama where there was none, really. But, hey, it's just like the soccer, the football, right? The soccer commentators, when they go, goal! They just make it look like it was an incredible thing that they did. Hey, you have to put some drama on it. But, no, definitely, I mean, Justin Thomas, definitely the player that should have won it. He was definitely the player of the year, the most consistent all throughout, and definitely he deserved it. But we'll talk about the point system soon. But I have to talk about Xander Schauffele. I mean, I've been talking about him. I said that the Rookie of the Year was going to be John Ram. And after that, it was Xander Schauffele. I even picked him as my dark horse for the PGA Championship. And I said this was my dark horse to win the FedEx Cup. He didn't want it. He came close. But much has been made about his unknown status as the winner of this finale. I mean, when plotted over the course of the Tour's 11-month schedule, that rise from 60th in his first start in October of 2016 at the Safeway to King of the Hill at Eastlake is phenomenal. And he showed his rookie growing pains with 7 missed cuts in his first 12 starts. But to classify him as a virtual unknown bursting onto the scene in Atlanta is to ignore his summer of excellence. I mean, an opening 6-under-66 at Erin Hills and the U.S. Open had media leafing through the player's guide trying to learn how to pronounce his name. It's Schauffele. When he drifted over the par in round 2, he was dismissed as a one-day major wonder. Playing the weekend at the National Championship and finishing T5 in your first major should not be regarded as an anomaly, although the former San Diego State golfer shared the difference between stardom in social media and emerging from the pack that week. 3 weeks later, at the Greenbrier, he became another actor in the drama of young talent that turned the 2017 season into a wave of the winners in their 20s. They are back to 20s, 20-something winning, and he did it with a flair. At the 161-yard 18th hole on Sunday, he hit his approach to 3 feet, and the birdie gave him the one-stroke win over Robert Streb at 14-under. Despite a miscut where I picked him to win as a dark horse, the PGA Championship, he was safely in the field for the start of the FedEx Cup. And a top 20 at the Northern Trust made a walkabout in Boston, not too damaging, going into Chicago. In his young professional career, Schauffele has had his share of pressure rounds. He finished one slot out of his tour card for the Web.com season in 2016, but forced his way into the top 10 at that season's last qualifier. He earned his way into the U.S. Open, emerging from a 5-man playoff in sectional qualifying. At the BMW in Chicago, Schauffele was sitting on the outside looking in for Atlanta at +2 with 6 holes to play on Sunday. He reeled off 4 birdies and an eagle to join the top 30 at Eastlake. Now, comfortably in the conversation about the Tour's class of 2011, he has the 28th win by a player in their 20s for this year, an all-time record. For a player who has moved 335 steps in the world golf rankings, Schauffele still sees himself as an underdog chasing, and he framed that sentiment after nailing down his tour card a year ago. But, hey, I don't think he's going to be any more an unknown next year, and I am telling you he's going to be fighting on to be one of those top 10 players next year. So watch out for him next year. Fred, your take on anything that Kieran and I have said before you start talking about the point systems here in the FedEx Cup?
No, that was a great roundup and bio for Schauffele. That was a lot of great information in there. And Kieran, I just want to say that, the FedEx Cup is not a major. It is. But, you know, and I don't know. It doesn't, you know, football's on over here, so nothing's going to draw a lot of eyeballs with football going on. But when you look at the list of names that have won the Tour Championship over the last few years, some of the names, Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, Henrik Stenson, Phil Mickelson, and Tiger Woods, you know, they immediately jump out at you. You know, Xander Schauffele now adds his name to that list. Yeah, that's kind of an anomaly. There are a couple others in there. The same thing is true for the FedEx Cup. Justin Thomas won 5 events this year, plus the PGA Championship. He's the best player right now on the PGA Tour. Sorry, Dustin, Jordan, and Jason, but that is a fact. Thomas now joins Woods, Stenson, Spieth, and Rory as FedEx Cup champions. That's something to brag about. That's something to be proud of. Yeah, $10 million goes with it, and that maybe overshadows that beautiful silver cup, but it doesn't have the history of the PGA Championship or the Masters or the U.S. Open or the Open Championship. It needs time, just like the players needs time. The players will probably become a full major in time. I really believe that. I consider it a major today, especially with the field. But I think the FedEx Cup, those four tournaments leading up to the Tour Championship, kind of build a little momentum. They kind of build a little bit like a snowball. You know, I think people, once we get more of it, I'm going to refer back to my kind of changing opinion on stuff as we go into the show a little bit more. But I know, Kieran, you discount the importance of it. But I think it really proves and it verified this year for sure with Justin Thomas winning and Jordan Spieth right there, who the best players really are right now in the game. And those two are the best right now. And plus, they've kind of maybe started a rivalry that's going to continue on for several years to come, which would be great to see. So I know they keep tweaking the point system, but this year I think the whole thing kind of turned out right. The guy that played the best all year ended up winning it, guys.
What's your take, Kieran?
I didn't realize we had PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan on the podcast and on the show tonight, but he was very, very positive there. You're looking for a job, I think, at the PGA Tour, because that's quite.
Are they hiring? I only need about 150 grand a year and about 2 months of vacation. I only work from 10 to 2, maybe 3 days a week.
Oh, man. So, Kieran, what you think about all of that? I just have a question for him later, but what you think about what he said about the point system and the FedEx Cup?
Yeah, I think Fred is correct in that the best players were rewarded for it, and that's fantastic. However, I think in the end, it's a real missed opportunity, the FedEx Cup. You know, to me, in the end, surely if you're trying to create a playoff, a real kind of head-to-head environment, why not just have that? Why not have guys going head-to-head literally in match play, or have a combination of stroke play and match play? Perhaps maybe the first 2 days of the Tour Championship, however, or even the FedEx Cup, have guys doing stroke play, eliminate the guys behind, or perhaps even give the guys an advantage in the score at the start due to their position on the leaderboard, on the ranking. So if a guy at the top of the ranking, give him a 10-shot head start on the field, and then the guys who get through to the last 8 or something, they can play a match play head-to-head over the weekend at the Tour Championship. Then the winner gets the overall prize, and the chances are the best players would still be there anyway. And you can have a real head-to-head battle between Spieth and Thomas or someone like that. And that would be exciting, because you have two guys literally going head-to-head for the big prize. Right now, all you have is just yet another stroke play event with a tournament sort of within a tournament. Doesn't really make much sense, because we're trying to follow two things at the same time, and it all becomes a bit unclear. And I think in the end, casual viewers just turn off, because when you have to explain to you what's going on, that isn't a good system. It should be clear-cut, it should be simple and easy to follow, and the FedEx Cup just isn't there. And in the end, you know, they were lucky to get Justin Thomas winning this. You had somebody else come through and won the whole thing, like Bill Haas did several years ago. It would feel a bit empty, or Brant Snedeker, or even Billy Horschel, or someone like that. It would not have the same ring to it. But with the way it was right now, in the end, it's only ever clear when actually one of the top five guys wins the Tour Championship, then he wins the whole prize. That's the only time it works. And the PGA Tour, unfortunate, in the last 4 or 5 years, that's been the case. But this kind of wasn't. Still, Thomas came through and won the whole thing. But I just think that it's needlessly complicated. the whole format doesn't live up to its name of being a playoff. You know, look at the NFL. Of course, you know, they play their regular season, then they go into the playoffs, and then it's up to the back level again. You know, they go head-to-head, and anyone can win, and that's exciting. I would love to see the FedEx Cup sort of adopt that sort of format. Until it does, I just can't see it gaining any sort of traction because, you know, even though you have good winners and it's Justin Thomas deserved it and all the rest of it, I just think the casual viewer watching that, it doesn't connect them on any level whatsoever. And I just think, you know, it should be simple, it should be easy to follow. And right now, I think the PGA Tour just isn't getting the most out of what they have. Yeah, they have good events, good fields and all the rest of it, but to make it truly distinct from everything else, to make it actually stand out apart from the majors and the Players' Championship, to make it a really unique concept, the FedEx Cup has to change the format and become more of a head-to-head playoff style. Otherwise, it's just like any other week. And in the end, for an event that's supposed to be really important, that's just not good enough.
Yeah. I totally agree. I think it lacks the drama. Who's going to be this week? You said, Fred, that it was building up. I didn't see that throughout the four tournaments. It was like predictable to see who was going to be coming out on top anyways. Even at the end here, when you had Paul Casey leading and he was certainly the 54-hole leader, and he had all the chance in the world to win. But you know that a Jordan Spieth or Justin Thomas would be able to take it with a top five anyway, no matter who was going to win besides them. So it's like just seeing who of them, but they're not the ones fighting to win the tournament, which is another thing. It's somebody can win the tournament, but somebody else can win the cup. It's like so much complication. I have to stand with Kieran and say, no, you have to make it simpler for everybody straight up. I mean, I would go even farther and say, if you're going to keep going this way and don't go like to a actual playoff system, just forget it and leave the whole year, and whoever does better the whole year, that's the one who wins the cup or whatever it is. But no, to me, it lacked the drama, definitely. It wasn't something that I was looking to see who was going to win it. I was just looking to see if Shoffley was going to win the tournament. Actually, I didn't care who was going to win at the end there. If it was Thomas or Spieth, I didn't care at all. And I know there's a lot of people that wouldn't care who, because it was completely so complicated. They were like, okay, whoever wins, I'll just go watch some football. But anyways, any final comments, Fred, before we close and go to Kieran, who has a lot to talk about what was going on the European side of the pond on golf?
No, you guys, I think we covered the topic really well. There's a lot of different things involved in the FedEx Cup playoffs for sure. It is a money grab for the players. I mean, we're talking, $65 million over these 4 weeks that has passed out. That's a lot of jack. And so, you know, it's good for the players. Hopefully it's good for the PGA Tour. I don't know if they can continue to keep doing what they're doing. I don't know if FedEx Cup will keep wanting to be involved to that level down the road. But for now, it's working. So I do like the idea, though. You know, we talked about this last week, Carlos, about maybe having 32 guys in the last event and then having match play. But the only problem with match play is if your top guys go out in the first round, then you do lose everybody. So, or maybe make it a round robin maybe or something that would hold interest for a little bit longer. But, I don't know. It's what it is right now. It's kind of the best they can come up with. So we'll see. Don't know.
We'll see. Kieran, there was action all over Europe, the European Tour, the Challenge, and the Ladies European Tour. Tell us a little bit about what happened there this weekend.
Yes, indeed, Carlos. And starting with the Portugal Masters, where Lukas Bjerregaard from Denmark, he came through and won there, you know, really convincingly with a final round of 65. And Vila Moura in the stunning Algarve in Portugal, you know, incredible weather they have. I think it's 300 days of sunshine a year. It's one of the most beautiful places in Europe, and it was a great finish. Daniel Bjergaard, a guy who has been kind of spoken about for several years as being an emerging talent, but had a really poor season. He was outside. He was in the 114th on the money list, only the top 100 retained their card for next season, so he was in danger of losing the tour card. But he came through here, and he won by 4 shots, 20 under par. He was just so impressive under that pressure to pick up his first title. And he now, of course, now has a 2-year exemption. He's now way up the money list, and now has a very good opportunity to potentially make it through to the season-ending Dubai World Championships in November if he has some good performances over the next few weeks towards the end of the season. And he said afterwards, after his round, he said, "Today is up there with one of my best rounds. Not so much the sixth under par around here. I've done that before, but under the pressure, some of the shots I hit, the 2 shots I hit on the 17th, for instance, are some of the best I've hit in a long time. I felt it was my time to go out and grab it and not wait for someone else to hand it to me." And that's certainly what he did, guys. And he went out there and he played so well over the whole week. And on that final round, he obviously had the lead, but he went out there and just took control of the day and didn't really give anyone else a chance. So it was extremely impressive, and he's certainly a name to watch. He's only 26 years of age, so he's still got some years ahead of him. In second place was Scotland's Mark Warren, who was also way down the money list. He was 173rd on the list, and he came through and finished in sole possession of second. So that gives him a really good chance now to potentially retain his card as he goes towards the British Masters this week and the Dunhill Links last week. And actually, last year, Mark Warren, who has always been kind of regarded as being an underachieving player, he was in a similar position at this time of year last season, and then came through and played really well at the Dunhill Links and retained his card that way. So for some reason, you know, Mark, he seems to only turn it on when he really has to, but he's a very capable player, but he just doesn't have the consistency that perhaps he should have. But he's finished second down in Portugal, and that is a huge boost to his chances of keeping his card. It was at 16 under par, 4 shots back of Bjergaard. And in third place were Graham Storm and his fellow Englishman, Eddie Pepperell, who's a very popular player. They were at 15 under. While home favourites, Ricardo Guevara and Jose Mafilip de Lima, finished a shot further back on 14 under, while George Coetzee from South Africa was in second place playing the last hole. He dropped 3 shots on the 18th after a triple bogey to finish in 7th, so disappointing for him, but a lot of joy for Bjergaard, who became a first-time winner on the European Tour. And there was also a first-time winner, guys, on the Challenge Tour, with Tapio Pulkkinen from Finland. If I've mispronounced his name, I do apologise sincerely. We'll just call him the Finn from this point onwards. And the Finn came through and he beat Chase Koepka, yes indeed, the Daughter of Brooks, in a three-hole playoff at the Kazakhstan Open. So a little bit kind of in the middle of nowhere there, just in between Russia and China, and then kind of in the middle of the Asia slash Europe slash Middle East. It's sort of stuck in the middle of nowhere, but not the most maybe attractive of destinations, but they a really good week for the Finn there. And he started the day one behind the lead, but he managed to overtake his playing partner for 3 birdies over the front nine. And he's a really big hitting player, and he had 3 more birdies on the back nine, and he closed for a 68 and a 17 under par total, which matched that of Chase Koepka, who shot a superb 66 in the final day to set up that playoff in Kazakhstan, which is just the second in the event's 12-year history. And in the end, the Finn came through and won on the 3rd extra hole. And with this victory, combined with 2 runner-up finishes earlier in the year, he has become the new leader on the Road to Oman money list and is now in pole position to secure his status on the European Tour next season. And now going across to the women's side of the game on the ladies' European Tour, it was the Andalucía Costa del Sol Open de España, easy for me to say, and local player Azahara Munoz, she thrilled the home fans there, and she retained her title to win there once again. A 29-year-old who lives nearby in a village called San Pedro Alcantara. She's been winning events at this course since the age of 9, and she came through with rounds 68, 64, 67, and 69 to finish 2 shots ahead of Carlota Seganda and Leanne Pace. And she won the event on a total of 19 under par. So great one there for Azahara Munoz. And gentlemen, I must quickly point out that one famous Spaniard one famous local man was there watching the event, hanging out with the girls, and you know who that was? Miguel Angel Jimenez. He was there watching, and he was there hanging out with the ladies, as Miguel likes to do. So he had a good time there, I'm sure. I'm sure there were a few bottles of wine consumed by the great man during his time there in Andalusia, his home part of the country. And so Munoz was actually had actually begun the final day in a tie for the lead with Saganda. But she regained the lead after Saganda actually double bogeyed the fourth hole. And Munoz came through and made three straight birdies in the fifth to get a four-shot lead. And she eventually kind of held on for that victory in the end. So obviously fantastic for her. But the big move of the day actually came from Leanne Pace, who's 2013 winner. She eagled the last hole for a 67, and Saganda also eagled that hole for a 71 and a share of second place with Pace. And also in contention was Georgia Hall, who of course impressed many people at the Solheim Cup and played really well at the Evian Championship and the Women's British Open. And Georgia was in contention, but she slipped back into fourth place after some bogeys early on in the round and just a bit of an inconsistent last day, but did shoot 69 in the end, but it didn't quite make the run that she would have hoped to on Sunday, but she was in a good position after two rounds. It kind of slightly declined over the weekend. However, I must, you know, when I was on the show last time, we sort of spoke about players doing silly things after they win events, being given jackets or wearing hats. Well, we also know about Poppy's Pond at the A and the Inspiration, hop into the pond. Well, in Spain here, at the beginning of the week, Munoz actually promised everybody that she would jump into the club's pool if she won the event. And she duly delivered, falling into the pool after the prize-giving ceremony. So, Carlos, you know, these players, they win events. She was delighted to win that. She hopped into the pool. But I tell you what, I haven't heard this, but who knows? Maybe Miguel Angel Jimenez jumped into the pool as well. It would be just like him, wouldn't it?
That was worth the price of admission. Definitely there. Hey, let's talk a little bit about the Web.com Tour, which is in the final stages, and it's just one more. In the third of the four finals, the Web.com Tour players learned Sunday at the 2017 DAP Championship why Canterbury Golf Club has played host to 13 major championships. For the second straight year, it took a playoff to determine the winner of the tournament, thanks to the toughness of the Canterbury's back nine. The winner of the three-man playoff was Nicholas Lindheim, who bested the Tour's number one ranked golfer, Jason Hadley, and Tour veteran Rob Oppenheim by sinking a 28-foot birdie putt on the first playoff hole, the difficult uphill par 4 18th hole. Lindheim, who lost in a four-way playoff last year to eventual champ Bryson DeChambeau, bogeyed the last two holes in regulation to force a playoff with Hadley and Oppenheim, all finish at 8-under. Hadley was not disappointed, as people might imagine. He said, and I quote, "I will now be fully exempt on the PGA Tour next season, and that's just awesome," end of quote. Oppenheim never figured he'd be in a playoff after his final round of 67, but the wind was picking up and conditions out there were getting tougher and tougher, and he was just happy to have a good event. Matt Atkins, who tied with Lindheim for the tournament lead after the first and third rounds, scored a hole-in-one on the par 3 198-yard 8-hole using an 8-iron. Unfortunately for him, from the third through six holes, he had three bogeys and a double bogey to go from 9-under to 4-under, and his ace cut his deficit to 3-over par on the day to 6-under for the tournament, trailing Lindheim at the time by 4 strokes. Low round of the day was posted by Dallas resident Martin Piller at 5-under-65. His overall score of 273 was 7-under, good for 4th place and a stroke back from the leaders. He was bogey-free Sunday through 16 holes. Fred, Silver Lake, Ohio native and Welsh Jesuit state champion Ryan Armour finished in a tie for 25th after challenging for the first two rounds. Armour, who has already earned his PGA Tour card for the season, shot a 72 Sunday, finished at 279. So there you go. That's my mention from Ohio for you.
Yeah, but my question is, was there something about a ruling that went on there? Something, Matthew Southgate? What, he's an Englishman,
I purposely left that out because I know that you love to talk about that.
I love the rule.
Yeah, you love the rule so much that I say, why would I explain it? I mean, Fred is the ultimate consummate professional about this. He's the all knowledge about that. So go ahead, Fred. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Take your shot.
You know, I'm so knowledgeable about that that I had no clue that if a lead knocks your ball offline, it's a four-shot penalty. Who ever heard of such a thing? Who knew that? I didn't know that. I've never seen that. I've only been around this game for like 50 years. And I've hit leaves before, and, you know, they're blown in after you hit the putt or something. And I didn't know. I had to put it back. Now I know.
You know all the strokes. Yeah. All the strokes that you have passed on, huh? Oh, man.
Oh, my goodness. That is unbelievable. Hey, let's talk about the Champions Tour. There was a real surprise at Pebble Beach last week. This guy, Bernhard Langer, won again.
Bernhard Langer. I haven't heard him before.
This time at the Pure Insurance Championship at Pebble Beach, this is the event that pairs first tee kids with the Champions Tour players, as well as playing for the first place check. The seniors are playing with their first tee partners for position in the tournament. Jerry Kelly and Scott McCarron gave chase to Langer, but the stoic German ran off three straight birdies on the back nine and cruised to a three-shot victory. It is his fifth victory of the year and the 34th of his PGA Tour champion's career. Langer was teamed with Justin Putwara from the first tee of Greater Portland, and they also captured a trophy for the team competition. Pretty good memory for that young man. One of the highlights of the tournament, Jerry Kelly recorded a final round, 5 under par 67. It was his 14th consecutive round in the 60s on the Champions Tour, and it broke the PGA Tour Champions record for consecutive rounds in the 60s set by Hale Irwin way back in 1999. Kelly's runner-up finish continued his strong play in his last four starts. He owns two wins and a T6 at the Shaw Charity Classic. The Champions Tour now gets a two-week break before the Charles Schwab Cup playoffs begin October 13th with the SAS Championships in North Carolina, guys.
And with that, we wrap up. I'm sorry for that. With that, we wrap up our back in backspace.
Get the phone, Carlos.
Yeah, see, that's yeah, somebody's calling, so I'm sorry about that. I'm on the
Maybe they want to talk on the show.
You know what? I'm live.
Maybe they want to talk about the
FedEx. Take the phone. Talk. Call later. See, those are the things that happen when we go live. But let's talk a little bit now about our four-caller quick previews. And, Fred, the Web.com tour comes to an end this week, so tell us all about it.
Yeah, while the international and American teams duke it out at Liberty National for the President's Cup this week, the Web.com Tour Championship will be held at Atlantic City Country Club in Atlantic City, Florida. It signals the end of the season, and 25 new PGA Tour cards for 2018 will be issued on Sunday. Peter Ewing, Chesson Hadley, and Nicklas Lindheim have already locked down three of those wins at the first three stops in the Web.com Tour finals in Columbus, Boise, and Cleveland. Ethan Tracy sits atop the bubble in the last place on the top 25 list. He has yet to earn any money through the first three events. Will he be able to hold his position or get knocked off by someone from below? So, again, you got a tournament in a tournament. You got somebody trying to win the Tour Championship, and then you got somebody trying to just get into the top 25 to get their card for next year, guys.
Yeah, last year, this tournament, you might remember, was canceled last year because of damage from Hurricane Matthew, but this year it's going to be held. And watch out for Sam Saunders, who's 24th on the Web.com Tour Finals among the 25 who don't have cards, but he's a member at Atlantic Beach. So watch out. And one more thing to comment about this is that among those still outside of the top 25 is Hunter Mahan, who had never played a Web.com Tour event until a month ago. He would need a top 15 to have a chance to get his card back. So that will be interesting there. Kieran, tell us all about what's going on the European Tour, the Senior Tour, and the Challenge Tour.
Yes, thank you, Carlos. And go and answer that phone call now. You have some free time while I talk. But yes, but, yeah, starting with the British Masters, which is obviously the main highlight on the calendar this week on the European Tour. And this has become, since it was reborn a couple of years ago, the British Masters has become a highlight on the calendar. It's supported by Sky Sports, the broadcaster in the UK. It's become very engaging with fans. They have events throughout the week. They have a thing called the Hero Challenge, which has been televised. That is actually taking place today on Tuesday, where it's under the lights at night time, and the players hit shots along with celebrities and sports stars into the par 3, and there's 3,000 people around the green. There's all kinds of stuff going on there, so it creates a different kind of environment. And the event itself is going to be a real highlight because you have the likes of Rory McIlroy playing and Sergio Garcia there in the field joining Lee Westwood, who's a tournament host at Close House in Newcastle in the northeast of England. And Lee Westwood is actually attached to that resort. So it's going to be an interesting week. Obviously, Rory McIlroy is playing this week, and he's playing next week at the Dunhill Links Championship in St Andrews. So Rory's year is coming to a premature end. And obviously, it's been a winless 2017, so he has two more opportunities to pick up a title this year, and this is the first of them. So it'll be interesting to see if Rory can actually get back to something like his best, or show some kind of form, some sort of sign of life. And if not, he'll be going into next season with a big question mark over his head. But over on the Senior Tour, this is kind of interesting, we'll have the Paris Legends Championship. And the Senior Tour are actually playing Le Golf National, which is next year's Ryder Cup venue, a long-time venue of the French Open on the European Tour. And it's obviously a really difficult golf course. It has some incredibly treacherous finishing holes with all the water. So, no offense to the old guys, but I think there could be some high scores this week on the Senior Tour. And Magnus Levy from Sweden, he's a defending champion. But you have some interesting players in the field. John Daly is playing in the field there. This week he's going to be in France, so that'll be interesting to see how he gets on. John Daly playing holes that are surrounded by water, it's set up for disaster, isn't it? I think there's a few balls in the water, maybe even some clubs. He's done that before, hasn't he? So you never know what can happen. And also Paul Broadhurst, who's been playing on the Champions Tour. I refuse to call it the PGA Tour Champions. I just sound so stupid. Champions Tour to me. Always rebranding and changing the names. It's the Champions Tour, honestly. So Paul Broadhurst, he's back in Europe. He's playing. And actually, Paul Broadhurst won the Open de France on the European Tour at this golf course over 20 years ago. And there are several players who have also won the French Open here, including Malcolm McKenzie, Miguel Angel Martin, Jean-François Rémusy, and Constantino Roca. So it should be a good event there, and we'll see if John Daly has any meltdowns on the Golf National. Anything's possible. And finally, the Challenge Tour is kind of edging towards the end of its season. They are in Spain this week, and there are only three events after this before the finale. The top 15 on the money list will secure the European Tour cards for next year. As I said earlier, the last week's winner is now top of the list. Chase Kipke is number 4. We also have European Tour veteran Richard McIlroy at 11, and also Bradley Neil from Scotland, who won the British Amateur 3 years ago. He's also in the top 15. He's number 12. So these guys are trying to make sure they stay in that top 15 and secure their European Tour cards for next year, Carlos.
And just to add to a little bit to what you said that they were playing the Hero Challenge, and they did, and it was tournament host Lee Westwood who became the third winner of the challenge, of the Hero Challenge, when he defeated Sergio Garcia in the final. So it was thousands packing around that specially constructed 120-yard par 3 on the Close House 18 hole, And I really like this thing. It's really quick. They just play that part three, and Westwood beat Russ Fisher and Martin Keimer and Garcia, Miguel Angel Jimenez, and Bernd Wiesberger on his way to the finals. And on that final, both reached par, but Lee Westwood won by pitching closest in the nearest to the pin shutout. So it's a good thing for the fans. They love it. I mean, it was packed there around, so it's a nice thing. I like it. I like it a lot. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about the LPGA, the Mackaysen New Zealand Women's Open. After 1 week break, the LPGA is returning to action this week for the inaugural playing of this tournament. But I have to say, it's inaugural in the LPGA. This tournament will lead them into the Fall Asian Swing. It will be played at the Windrush Farm Golf Club in Auckland in New Zealand with a purse of $1.3 million and a first prize of $195,000. Is the 27th tournament of 34 that they have in the schedule. Like I said, this is the first year that it's going to be an official LPGA event, but it dates back to 2009 and has been co-sanctioned by the Ladies European Tour since 2010. Lydia Ko has won the last 2 years and three of the last four. She won in 2013 as an amateur. This is really a weak field. None of the top four on the LPGA money list are playing. Just two of the top 25 from the LPGA priority list, 13 of the top 50, and five of the top 50 players from the Rolex rankings will be teeing it up. The field will be led by Lydia Ko, who is playing in her home country, and Brooke Henderson. The highest-ranked American player teeing up is going to be this week Daniel Kang, who's number 23. Incredibly, and this is incredibly, because there's not one South Korean player teeing it up. No, that is not there, but it's ranked inside the top 100 in the Rolex rankings. That's a lot of players that are not there. Ko narrowly beaten out Ariane Huitenhagen last year for the LPGA money title. Is at number 19 this season, and she has gone nearly 18 months without a victory. We've seen a resurgence from her. Like I said, she's the top player in the field and is playing in her home country. If she doesn't win this one, I don't know. Anyway, other players to watch out. I'm feeling it this week. I mean, Daniel Kang, she's the next best player in a weak field, and she is going to be having in the back none other than Stevie Williams. She, after Stevie Williams split with Adam Scott earlier in last week, because Adam needed somebody who's going to be there all year, and he was splitting time with Stevie Williams, so Stevie said that he could not commit for the whole year. Daniel Kang was just at the first thought, she thought that someone was pulling her leg when they said, hey, would you like to have Stevie Williams on her back? Come on. But Dennis' messages turned to phone calls, which turned to emails, and the deal was done. The 24-year-old world number 21 and the winner of the KPMG PGA Championship headed to the LPGA Tour, first ever stop in New Zealand with a smile on her dial and a spring in her step, because she's going to have Stevie Williams. I don't know who's going to be more famous there or who's going to be looking more, if it was going to be Stevie or Daniel. But anyway, that's one of the players that you should look forward there. Also, Jody Iwochata, who's still looking for that elusive first victory, look out for her too. If you want to watch it on television, remember there's a 16-hour time differential between Eastern Time and Auckland, New Zealand. So you're going to have to watch Wednesday and Thursday from 9 p.m. to 1 a.m. in Golf Channel, and Friday and Saturday would be from 8 p.m. to midnight. Remember about that. And also, on the Symetra Tour, the official qualifying tour for the LPGA is rolling into Longwood this week for the fourth annual IOA, Insurance Office of America, Golf Classic at Alacqua Country Club in Longwood, Florida. Last champion was Jackie Stolting in 2015, another tournament that last year was washed out by Matthew, who forced the cancellation of the event. The tournament is going to be in play on Friday, and it's a 54-hole tournament that concludes on Sunday, October 1st. It's a field of 108 professionals from the U.S. and 27 countries around the globe who will be competing for $150,000 total tournament purse. the winner's payout is $22,500, which, and the total purse is $50,000 over the 2016. This is the second to last event of the season, so players are jockeying for position on the Volvic race for the card money list. The top 10 on the money list at the conclusion of the season earned the LPGA Tour membership for the 2018 season. And the current top 10 on the money list are all scheduled to complete, including number one, Benny Apanipas Sofon from Thailand, number two, Céline Boutier from France, and two-time winner, and number three, Nana Koerstz Madsen from Denmark, who's a three-time winner. The field also is going to include 22 current LPGA Tour members. One more thing, which is really important to mention, tickets are complimentary courtesy of IOA all 3 days of tournament play, because the proceeds from this tournament will be benefiting the American Cancer Society. With that, we wrap up our four call or quick previews. Now we're going to go for our Power 5 news. And, Fred, you're going to talk to us a little bit about the 2017 and 18 PGA Tour schedule that was announced. Who's in, who's out? Tell us all about it.
Yeah, I am, Carlos, but before I do that, I'd like to invite our listeners to log on to www.ohiogolfjournal.com to view the September issue with Gaylord Golf Mecca on the cover. It's featured in the September issue. It's loaded with golf news, reviews, travel, and information. Again, it's ohiogolfjournal.com. Comes out every month. And if you sign up, it'll come right to your email inbox. There's no cost. All you got to do is register. Yeah, Carlos, the PGA Tour announced their schedule for this year. There are really not a lot of changes. There's a couple things that are interesting. But with the addition of the CJ Cup at Nine Bridges in Korea, the fall wraparound includes 8 events this year, beginning with the Safeway Open in Napa Valley at Johnny Miller's Silverado Country Club. In addition to stops in Northern California and Korea, the tour will visit Malaysia, Jackson, Mississippi, China, Las Vegas, Mexico, and wrap up at St. Simons Island off the coast of Georgia. You know what, Carlos? I'm beginning to get this wraparound schedule thing. I mentioned I'm changing my thinking on some stuff. This is another one. It's getting the tour some worldwide exposure. It gives these younger guys a few events to get their feet wet. Yeah, it's football season in the U.S., but they can make a few more fans in Korea, Asia, Malaysia, and Mexico. It's a good deal. Besides, we give the tour grief for not being international enough. Well, these events help expand the reach of the PGA Tour around the world. There are a couple fun events like the Hero World Challenge plus the Shark Shootout sponsored by QBE in Naples at the beginning of December. The tour will once again kick into high gear in Hawaii in January with the Tournament of the Champions and the Sony Open. 5 events make up the West Coast Swing, the Career Builder Challenge, Farmers Insurance, Waste Management, AT&T, and Genesis at Riviera round out that list. The tour then heads to Florida as normal for the Honda, but then again, since we're not going anything with Trump and we're not playing it down there in Miami, we got to break off and go to Mexico for the WGC Mexico. Then come back to finish up the Florida swing with the Valspar and the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Then they go back to Texas for the match play. I know you're going to want to mark down these dates. The Masters will be April 5th to the 8th. The Players May 10th. The U.S. Open June 14th. The Open at Carnoustie. The Open at Carnoustie, Kieran, that's right in your backyard. July 19th, and the PGA Championship at the beginning of August. That's going to change in 2019, but for 2018, we're still in the same kind of pattern. The FedEx Cup playoffs begin August 23rd with the Northern Trust once again in New Jersey, head to Boston for the Dell. The BMW, however, moves out of Illinois to Aronimink in Philadelphia before wrapping up at Eastlake once again September 20th through 23rd. There's a Ryder Cup next year. It's going to be in Paris, September 28th to 30th. The only real drama in the schedule is Tiger's National Tournament, normally sponsored by Quicken Loans, does not have a sponsor or a course to play on. The PGA Tour sent a letter to Congressional stating they were rescinding their contract to host an event there. The Detroit News ran a story that Quicken Loans owner Dan Snyder wants to bring the tournament to Detroit. Quoting from the article, PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan told the Associated Press this week that the Tour and Quicken continue to have sponsorship discussions. But if you read between the lines, the condition of a renewal appears to be a move to the Motor City. Woods agent Mark Steinberg seemed to admit as much. That's clearly been something that has been discussed, Steinberg told the AP, but not in great detail at this point. The Senior Tour announced a couple of weeks ago about a new event to be held in Flint at the Warwick Hills, which hosted the old Buick Classic, but there's not been a PGA Tour event in Michigan for many years. Kieran, I think you've got a little bit more about scheduling ideas from Rory McIlroy, because Rory now, he's an expert on everything, and he's going to straighten out all this the scheduling stuff between the European Tour and the US PGA Tour.
Well, he is, and I think Rory would quite like to make things much more simple for himself when it comes to scheduling, Fred, and he certainly is. He had this idea that it has, of course, been mentioned many times throughout the years. I think Greg Norman was the first one, really, back in the early 90s, who suggested it, and it actually eventually led to the creation of the World Golf Championships. And it is indeed the idea of having a world tour, very similar to what tennis has at the highest level, where the best players play all across the world throughout the year on their own kind of circuit. And that's kind of what Rory wants to have. And he was talking to the No Weighing Up podcast, those guys at No Weighing Up, who have a very big social media following. They seem to have access to all tour players, much more access, I'm afraid to say, than many of the actual journalists on tour these days, which is perhaps not the most positive sign for the media. But they have some great access, and Rory joined them for, I think it was a two-hour-long podcast discussing all kinds of issues from his own game to all kinds of, obviously get married this year as well, so there's a lot to talk about with Rory. And one of the subjects that came up was the idea of Rory suggesting we should have a world tour, and it's something that he believes is going to happen soon. And he said to the podcast, and I quote, "The world tour is going to happen one day, and I think it has to have all these tours competing against each other and having to change dates. It's counterproductive. I think everyone has to come together. The easy thing would be for the PGA Tour to buy the European Tour and take it from there. They could still run European events, and we'll have, say, 12 big events a year outside the majors, a bit like they do in tennis. I don't see any other way. I know discussions have taken place, so maybe one day." Well, we'll have to wait and see about that. And, of course, it would be fascinating to see if Keith Pelly, the European Tour's chief executive, has perhaps cornered him in a quiet room somewhere in Newcastle this week for the British Masters and asking him, "What are you talking about, Rory? I'm Keith Pelly. I run the show here." And, of course, Keith Pelly is a man who's got his own vision about this. Apparently, according to James Corrigan of The Telegraph, the European Tour actually rejected an approach from the PGA Tour 4 years ago. And, of course, Pelly, who came into that job 2 years ago, has made it clear he wants to establish what is a viable alternative to the US Tour with the Rolex Series, which of course began this year, which is 8 strong events of a $7 million prize fund in each of them. So trying to make the European Tour more attractive and to the top players. But of course, the PGA Tour has an immense power, so much money on that circuit. Every week it attracts all the players to come across from Europe and play in America full time. Only playing the odd event in Europe to really keep their tour card and play in the Ryder Cup and stuff like that, and maybe play their own home Open Championship and so on in their own country. So the European Tour faces a deep issue. I think the World Tour, in some ways, if you look at the majors and you look at the World Golf Championships and pick out a few other events, we pretty much have one unofficially that the top guys play in. I've said this on the show many times through the years, and there are essentially two European tours. There's the European Tour that Rory McIlroy plays, which is the majors, the World Golf Championships, and 5 other events, the Irish Open and so on, the big ones. And then there's the European Tour that everybody else plays, which is, you know, playing in South Africa and playing in Asia and playing everywhere else and playing events that two men and a dog go and watch. That's the difference. So will this change on a meaningful level going forward? obviously we've heard kind of talk about this on the women's side of the game as well, with the LPGA and the Ladies European Tour. I think still the European Tour, will remain its own entity for, I think, many years to come. But I think it's certainly possible in the coming years we see greater coordination between the PGA and the European Tours, perhaps more co-sanctioned events. I've always said I think events like the Scottish Open and the Irish Open could very easily be co-sanctioned before the majors, before the Open Championship, much like the LET and the LPGA have done with the Women's Scottish Open this year. So I think that's more likely to happen in the near future than a genuine takeover. But I think Rory's correct in saying that the future for the game at the highest level will be greater coordination and, in the end, more exclusive events for the top players, picking the best players, the biggest names, going head-to-head each week. So I think Rory, he likes to give his opinion on certain things, and this is certainly an interesting snippet from that podcast, which I would certainly, after you've listened to the Back Nine Report, people, go and listen to the podcast, because it's quite interesting.
Yeah, after you listen to the Back Nine Report.
It's after the Back Nine Report. Listen to the Back Nine Report twice, and then listen to the podcast.
That is correct.
Yes.
Yes, yes. Hey, let's talk about Tiger Woods. Hey, he says he's not ready to say when he'll return to competition, although he has already begun competing against a couple of PGA Tour stars. In an update Friday on his website, Tiger says that while his practice regimen is still limited to 60 shots, 60 yards in, and he has been having putting matches against Ricky Fowler and Justin Thomas and his backyard practice facility in Jupiter Island in Florida. Tiger says a crucial test will be an upcoming x-ray taken on his back to see his progress 6 months after his surgery. He says that after that, his surgeon will give him the parameters of what he can do moving forward. Who will be an assistant to captain to his body, Steve Stricker, is him at this week's President's Cup. But he did say that he has begun an aggressive workout regimen that includes running on a treadmill, biking, swimming, and lifting weights twice a day. Most importantly, he says he's pain-free and been sleeping better as a result, although he's still not in a position to consider a timetable for a return to the PGA Tour. He said that playing-wise, he's not looking ahead yet because he doesn't know what kind of swing he's going to use or what his body is going to allow him to do. Until he does, he says he's going to listen to his doctors and continue to take it slowly. One person he has been listening to, though, is 28-time Olympic medalist Michael Phelps, who has started some public speaking on the topic and has become an informal counselor to stars, including Tiger Woods. And he can relate very well. I mean, not only they are both bigger-than-life supernova stars, but after his second DUI arrest in 2014, Phelps spent 8 weeks at the Meadows, which is an Arizona treatment center, to deal with the anxiety and depression that he had tried to overcome on his own after the 2004, 2008, and 2012 Olympics. Recognizing how difficult it is for many people to recognize their vulnerabilities and reach out for help, Phelps has devoted himself to unraveling the stigma of mental illness. Phelps called the toxicology report on Tiger from his arrest in May a massive scream for help. Woods pleaded not guilty last month to driving under the influence over Memorial Day weekend, but he's expected to enter a program for the first-time offenders. Curiously, Tiger, in his post, made sure to thank his sponsors, who he says have remained steadfast in their support throughout his troubles. Earlier this week, the report surfaced that Woods' D.C. area PGA Tour event, which benefits the Tiger Woods Foundation, is in jeopardy because it does not have a title sponsor. Fred, seems like Tiger this time is really seeking at least the right help, is doing the right things. I just hope, more than him getting back to golf, that he can really straighten his life and be able to enjoy it. If he comes back and play, that will be icing on the cake.
Yeah, you know, Carlos, we never really talked about this, but, you know, I will never forget a statement that Earl Woods made that, you know, golf was really just one part of Tiger Woods' life, that he had so much more to offer. And, yeah, I think Earl envision Tiger being a leader for some cause, whether it be philanthropic or in the political sector or something. And Tiger, you know, carries himself that way. He's a smart guy. You know, maybe he can get himself straightened out. And you know, he certainly has a lot to offer. So maybe he is getting the right stuff, the right help, and maybe he can get things on track. So, hey, last week we had an interesting little tidbit that we announced that Jay Monahan announced this new integrity program. And this week, in an interview there at the Tour Championship, it almost sounded like he said the Tour may get involved with gambling someday.
What?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, in kind of a backhanded way, but, you know, this new integrity program is set to take effect January 1 of 2018. And Golf.com reported that the Tour entered into an agreement with sports data technology service Genius Sports to monitor betting markets worldwide for any suspicious activity. Monahan said, "We felt it was important to move forward with an integrity program to further protect our competitive our competition from betting-related issues. Legalizing sports gambling has gained some traction over the last few years, with pending Supreme Court cases on NCAA, NBA, NFL, NHL, and Major League Baseball involved in New Jersey's quest to offer regulated sports betting at casinos and racetracks. These are going to serve as an important legislative benchmarks when they're decided. The Tour's partnership with Genius Sports is similar to those of other U.S.-based sports leagues that have entered into relationships to better prepare for the potential legalization of domestic sports gambling. According to ESPN, Genius Sports and the Major League Baseball entered into a line monitoring agreement 2 years ago. Gambling doesn't stop once play begins. Customers can wager while the tournament is going on, with sites relying on live data to determine odds. Such live betting is gaining traction overseas on offshore betting sites and in Nevada, where some sports books offer mobile apps. There's an app for that that features live wagering within the state's borders. Speaking with media last week at the Tour Championship, Monahan may have tipped his hand slightly. He said, "You have to see how daily fantasy continues to evolve. We want to make certain that the legality and the acceptance of daily fantasy is universal before we would become involved." So, I mean, he kind of says they would be involved if everything's on the up and up. So that means the PGA Tour could become involved at some point if it were determined to be a legal entity in, say, New Jersey, for example. Monahan's point is that fantasy wagering stimulates fans' engagement with the sport, and he sees that as a good thing. "I'm not too sure about any type of gambling on golf. I know in Las Vegas and Europe it's widely accepted, but I guess I'm too much of an old snob or purist. I do enjoy the occasional wager among competitors on the course. Does that make me a hypocrite? Like all the fall wraparound that we've railed against since it began, do I need to rethink my gambling position also? Carlos, I'm confused. I'm going to have to go to counseling. I'm going to have to call Tiger or Michael Phelps or something maybe. I don't know. I don't know who I am anymore."
I'll text you Michael's cell phone so you can talk to him.
Thank you.
If you can add this to the many things that you're changing your mind around. So. I am hopeful that you will. I'm hopeful that you will. Hey, I can see you betting on this. I don't know. I see that in the future. But I won't bet on it. I won't bet on that. Let's just.
You got to bet on it. Okay. All right.
I'm not going to bet on it.
All right.
Hey, Kieran, there was a Hall of Fame induction in New York, or there will be. So tell us all about what's going to happen there.
They're doing it. They're doing it right now. I was watching a little bit of it. Yeah, I was watching a little bit of it a little while ago. Yeah.
It's all happening right now.
obviously, it's a shame, actually, because we're taking all those years away from the Hall of Fame. They're listening to us instead of that, which is obviously unfortunate for everybody involved. So hopefully,
maybe they can do like me and just tape it, Karen.
Go and watch the replay of the Hall of Fame ceremony later
on.
But yes, Carlos, you were corrected. I must quickly say there, actually, but the gambling incident that Fred was talking about, I bet you somebody who was really intrigued by that story was Phil Mickelson. He'd be all over that. Any chance to gamble and golf.
He'd have his app. He'd be playing. He'd be on the app between shots.
You know, he's going to make a comedian about that. You'll see. He'll make a comedian about that.
The gambling comedian. I love it.
I see. Actually, talking of Phil Mickelson, did you see Phil Mickelson today in his alligator shoes at the President's Cup? He's honestly some man, isn't he, Phil Mickelson? He's like a cartoon character from another planet, really, isn't he? But he's certainly entertaining, that's for sure. But yeah, Phil would love to put a bit of gambling on the course, that's for sure. Well, he does it anyway, but to do it legally would be even better, wouldn't it? So that's all above board. But yes, Phil Mickelson is actually in the Hall of Fame for gambling as well as golf. But for golf, he's here, and there are 5 new inductees into the World Golf Hall of Fame, which, you know, is quite a nice organization. It's quite a nice place where the museum itself, the Hall of Fame, is a really interesting facility. It's got some wonderful artifacts, and it's a really good place to go and visit if you're a golf fan. But the Hall of Fame itself, I know it's very much an American concept, but I've always thought it's a bit cheesy, and there's some very strange names in it. However, the 5 who are being inducted here, I think, are certainly deserving of that place. And they're firstly Henry Longhurst, who's very well known in the UK, who was a weekly columnist for the London Sunday Times for 40 years, and he's also kind of the first golf TV personality for BBC from the 1950s until 1978. He was really Peter Alice's mentor as an announcer on BBC television in the UK. And Henry Longhurst, who, of course, has been dead 40 years, he's been inducted into the Hall of Fame, which is a nice way to preserve his name. But in terms of living inductees, of which there are 4 of them, and the first one is Davis Love III, who of course is a captain this week at the President's Cup, a player who has obviously a very distinguished career over many years, over 4 decades in the PGA Tour. He's won 21 times, including actually 2 years ago at the Wimbledon Championship. He won 1 major at the 1997 PGA at Wingfoot. He also won 2 Players Championships in 1992 and 2003. And he also played in 6 Ryder Cup teams and 6 President's Cup teams. And he's captained the Ryder Cup team twice, of course, including last year's victorious exit. So Davis Love has been a very popular player on the PGA Tour for many years. It's a family that has a very deep history within the game. And he's certainly a fitting member of the Hall of Fame. And, of course, is Meg Mallon, who is from the LPGA, one of the great American golfers of her generation. She won 18 times in the LPGA Tour, including 4 majors, and she was a member of 9 Solheim Cup teams. She was a captain in 2013, and she was recognized as being one of the LPGA's top 50 players of all time. She's a great player and a big personality, and certainly a very deserving member of the Hall of Fame, as is a player who needs no introduction, Lorena Ochoa, who, of course, was a superstar when she came onto the scene back in the mid-2000s. She was obviously incredible. She was ranked world number 1 for 158 consecutive weeks between 2007 and 2010. She won 27 times on the LPGA Tour, including 2 majors, including, of course, winning the Women's British Open at the Old Course at St Andrews in 2007. And she won 21 events in 3 years at one point. So she was an exceptional player, retired at a very early age, and obviously wants to have a family and whatnot and enjoy the rest of her life. But, you know, she's a very likable personality. Something I think the LPGA Tour still misses her to this day, and she is the first Mexican-born golfer to enter the World Golf Hall of Fame, and that's certainly fitting. And finally, someone from closer to where I'm from, Ian Woosnam, who from Wales, of course, been kind of overlooked for the Hall of Fame. He's one of Europe's big 5 golfers of the 1980s and 90s. All the rest of them are in the Hall of Fame. Ian was kind of left out for a while, which seemed very unfortunate. He's certainly a deserving member of that because he's had a wonderful international career across the planet. And, of course, he's best known for winning the Masters in 1991. But people might forget Ian Wilson was actually world number one for almost a year, between 1991 and 1992. He played in 8 Ryder Cup teams. He captained the Ryder Cup team in 2006. He won the Order of Merit on the European Tour. He was named the European Tour Player of the Year in 1987 and 1990. He's won so many events all across the world, and he now finally joins the rest of Europe's Big Five golfers in the Hall of Fame. So, Carlos, obviously, some good names there, but I think the one that stands out for me is having Lorena Ochoa Reyes in the World Golf Hall of Fame. You know, what a player she was, and I still think the LPGA misses her.
Definitely. I mean, she left just too soon out of... She left golf just too soon, and she still had a lot more to offer, and that's why we're still missing her from that. But they're very deserving, and congratulations to her. Hey, to wrap up here, the Par 5 News, I have to say that many players crave a ball that is soft feeling around the greens, but still goes miles off the tee. And there are plenty who want top performance at a friendly price point. The new title is DT True Soft. It's ticking all of those boxes. DT True Soft was first introduced 2 years ago as a replacement for the DT Solo, and the Solo stood for soft and long. The new model certainly aims to deliver, to still deliver on those fronts, and it comes in yellow, an added bonus for the winter golfer. There's a low compression core, which is larger to help keep not only spin down with the driver, but also an increased short game spin for stopping power on the green. An added soft field comes from the new proprietary TrueFlex cover, which should deliver very soft feel around the green, improve short game performance. Titleists say they have also improved the aerodynamics for consistent piercing and truer ball flight. The availability for this, the DT TrueSoft models, like I said, are available in white and optic yellow models with play numbers 1 through 4. Titleist DT TrueSoft golf balls will be available in the U.S. golf shops already beginning September 21st, and with a price of $21.99, and through the U.K. and Ireland. So be ready. Be ready, Kieran, from October 2nd.
I'll be ready.
It's just going to be 23 pounds per dozen. And with that, we wrap up our Par 5 News. Now, let's talk about the practice range, the theme of the week, where every week, Fred and I, we pick a topic, and each one of us take a our own take on it. But this week, you know, we already said it, is the President's Cup. So we need more than one to talk about, more than two to talk about. And that's why we have Kieran, as usual, giving us this great information. And he's going to help us try to give you all the information about the President's Cup. I'm going to start telling you that the Team USA is going to be squaring up against the rest of the world. That is excluding Europe. This week for the 10th President's Cup matches at Liberty National, the home side leads the series 9.5 to 1.5. First held in 1994, the President's Cup is contested by a team from the U.S. and an international side representing the rest of the world, like I said, outside of Europe. It is now second only, maybe third, in terms to the Ryder Cup in terms of prestige when it comes to men's teams events. Team USA is still looking for a seventh straight victory. Last time the U.S. won 15.5 to 14.5, it was a lot closer than everybody expected. To this point, the U.S. has dominated the competition, winning 9 of the 11 matches contested. The only international win came at Royal Melbourne in 1998. In 2003, the match was half. The host site is going to be Liberty National Golf Course in Jersey City, New Jersey, which previously hosted the opening FedEx Cup playoff event in 2009, won by Heath Slocum, and 2013, which was won by Adam Scott. Liberty National Golf Club in New Jersey was designed by Tom Kite and Bob Kopp, was only open for play in 2006. It's constructed on former industrial land on banks of the Hudson River. I mean, with views over the Manhattan and the Statue of Liberty, it's a striking setting for a golf tournament. The course will be playing at a par 71 and 7,328 yards long. The competition features teams of 12 led by a non-playing captain. The format has changed over the years, but at Liberty National, the contest will be over 4 days with a total of 30 matches to be contested. The format to be played in this edition will be on Thursday, 5 foursomes, which is the alternate shot. On Friday, 5 4-ball, which is the better ball. Saturday, there will be 4 foursomes and 4 4-ball matches on the morning and on the afternoon. And on Sunday, there will be 12 singles matches. Each President's Cup has had an honorary captain, and this year is the 45th United States President Donald Trump, but he has yet to confirm whether he will attend. As you all know, President Trump is embroiled in a row with a number of sports stars right now and teams after criticizing players opting to protest during the national anthem. So, and he has a lot of things going on, so we don't know if he's going to be there. Hopefully he will, and everything will be centralized in golf and nothing else. But, Kieran, tell us a little bit about the international team and its chances.
Yes, once again, Nick Price is back as captain for the international team. They, of course, have actually came so close to ending that run of losses 2 years ago in South Korea, which I thought was actually a really entertaining event. I really enjoyed that one 2 years ago. I thought the atmosphere was very good. I thought the golf was excellent. And since the format has changed, obviously, making it fewer points in the President's Cup, making it potentially a closer match overall, it's been more exciting. Because in the end, for many years, the U.S. were fairly comfortable in dominating the event, because even though the international team tried very hard, I think the reality was that the U.S. has had a stronger team depth-wise. Obviously, the internationals have had very good players in the top four or five over the years, from Ernie Els to Vijay to Greg Norman and those guys. And now you have Jason Day, Adam Scott, and Louis Oosthuizen and Mark Leishman. And, of course, Hideki Matsuyama. How could I forget him? He's there too. But below that, often the teams are a little bit weaker. And the question will be whether that will be the case this year again, where, yes, the top five or six players are exceptional among the world's best, but when you go below that, are the U.S. players stronger than the international's lower half players? And that will be ultimately, I think, the deciding factor this week as to whether the internationals can actually upset the odds and come through and win this. In the end, the international team, they always have a disadvantage in the respect that they are from such a wide, disparate part of the world. It's not like being an American team where they're all from the U.S., they're all playing under the same flag, they all know each other that way, they're all from the same country, so you have that patriotic side of things there. And even on the European side, in the Ryder Cup there, they're all from the same continent, they've all played in the European Tour, they're kind of united that way historically. Well, obviously the international team is from, they're from Asia, from South America, from South Africa, Australia. It's a very diverse group, and it can be hard to bring those guys together. However, I think in more recent years, they've developed kind of a core of a team, the likes of Jason Day and Adam Scott and Ray Westhaven and Charles Schwartzel and Brandon Grace and Matsuyama. Those guys are established names now. They've played in President's Cup teams. They've seen the Americans celebrate and enjoy the victory. They want some of that for themselves. On the upper half of the team, even though the likes of Adam Scott and Louis Westhaven aren't quite as best as their form, we all know how capable they are. And if you remember 2 years ago, Louis Westhaven and Brandon Grace put together an unbeatable team. They were an incredible partnership 2 years ago, and I'm sure we'll see that team back together this week. Obviously, Jason Day has come back into form in recent weeks after a really poor year. He's getting back something like his best, of course, with his new caddy by his side. And again, elsewhere, Mark Leishman, of course, won recently in the FedEx Cup playoffs, so he's also in really good form. And below that, you have an interesting, diverse bunch of Siwoo Kim, the players' champion, who is a bizarre player, and he comes through and he wins one of the biggest events of the year, and then he does virtually nothing else. He's a real anomaly, but he's there, he's certainly capable. You also have Johnny Vegas here from Venezuela. You have Adam Hadwin from Canada, making his first appearance as well, as is Emiliano Grillo from Argentina. Well, Anirban Halehiri was also a captain's pick, and he makes his second appearance after playing last time. So Carlos, the international team obviously faces a really strong task this week because the US team is formidable. It's a really strong lineup. We all know how good the top guys are. You know, Dustin Jordan, Justin Rickefeller, those kind of guys, backed up by Berger and Koepka, and obviously the more experienced players like Mickelson there too, and Kuchar. So the US team is formidable. They have a really strong nucleus, a very young squad, but also some experience in there too. They're all, there's a lot of major champions and tour winners on that list. They'll be hard to beat. International team, a lot of the top guys aren't in some excellent form, but you know, this week it's a different environment. You know, they're playing as a team, they're playing with somebody else by their side. It's not the same as playing on yourself in a stroke play event, so that can bring out the best in some players. I think they're probably determined to do quite well this week, but it just lacks a little bit of spark, a little bit of needle, a little bit of an edge to it that the Ryder Cup has or the Solheim Cup has. There isn't that same rivalry between the two teams. And the players, therefore, don't quite have the same, I don't think their adrenaline rush isn't quite the same as it would be in those other competitions. However, I think it's always been quite an entertaining event, particularly in recent years, it has become closer. I'm going to watch it. I enjoy team match play anyway, and I hope we see a close match. I think it's good for the President's Cup. And in the end, if the international team was to come through and win this week, that'd be fantastic for the event. You know, it needs to be competitive. If the Americans keep going on and winning all the time, then it continues to be a non-event. Even though it's been getting closer and closer, but if the result's still the same, much like it was in the Ryder Cup back in the 60s and 70s, it just becomes a less interesting event. And so I hope the international team can put a strong performance on this week. I think they have a decent team, but there are some question marks next to several of the players, including some of the experienced ones. But if they get some good partnerships together and if the top players play to their best and some of the lesser guys kind of surprise us, then they might make this a contest. But I think Carl Schaff would say that the Americans are really, really strong favourites, particularly with that New York crowd backing them. The vociferously, as the New York fans do, they're loud, they're patriotic, they'll be behind their team, they'll be a good atmosphere, and I think that will make the Americans a really hard team to beat.
Oh, definitely. They're loaded. And the thing that I see with the internationals more than anything, because they have always been overwhelmed on paper, and especially in the depth. Last time when they changed the format to make it a little bit more competitive, we just saw the result. It was just a one-point difference. But the difference back then to this year, I think, is that those top players are not in top shape coming into top playing shape. They're not hot streaks or anything. I mean, Hideki Matsuyama had a great year until after he revealed that he was married and had a daughter. I mean, ever since he's been not playing anything. Jason Day still not fully recovered from his injury and his illness that he had before. Adam Scott is just not playing that good. Louis Oosthuizen, hot and cold. Charles Schwartz. So the only guy that I can say that has been playing great there down the stretch is being Mark Leishman. Other than that, you cannot point to anybody really being hot down the stretch here coming into the event. So that's why I am, like you, hoping that we can see a close match. I can see some of the players there that are new players that are really feisty to play here on this, which is something that team match needs, is feisty players that really won't back down, like Adam Hadwin, I mean, Liano Grillo, I know they won't back down here, but they need more than that to try to compensate for the U.S. team, definitely loaded, which Fred is going to tell us about. I just hope, you know, Nick Price, like you said, is the international captain for the third time. No captain has ever lost three times. Well, this might be the first one, Fred.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, we talk about this all the time on these team events, and one team is so much stronger on paper than the other. In this case, I mean, it's just a fact. You know, and you made the point also, both of you, that Adam Scott, Hideki, Jason Day, Louis Oosthuizen, and Charles, those are all world-class players. But Oosthuizen has been battling injuries. Charles has not been playing that well of late. Hideki has not been playing that well the last month or so. Leishman has been playing well. Johnny Vegas has been playing pretty well. But Brandon Grace, you know, not so much. And then you've got Hadwin, Siwoo Kim, Mion Agrio, you know, Honorbon, Lahiri. Three of those guys are rookies. Lahiri, really, you don't see him that much throughout the year. So this is a bigger stage. This is a big deal for those guys. So, but the U.S. team, you know, besides the fact that they're loaded, these guys, they kind of like each other, most of them. It's not like the days where Phil and Tiger, you know, were kind of divisive and they had their own friends and the camps were split, you know, on a team. These guys actually go out and hang out together. So I love the vibe around this team. I really think Steve Stricker has a very good group here. So I'm going down through it. I mean, you just go every name, you know. Dustin Johnson, he's been number one for 38 weeks, and he seemed to return to form after his stair slippage in April. He had a very good FedEx Cup playoff series. He won an event and was up high on pretty much all of them. Jordan is number two. He's Mr. Excitement. He lives for this stuff. You know he's going to be a factor. He's on form, having played well. Justin Thomas, what can you say about him? 5 wins this year. FedEx Cup champion, going to be player of the year. PGA champion, you know, what more can you say? I mean, you want this guy on your team. He's a young lion. Ricky Fowler, he's number 8 in the world. So you got your first 4 guys are all in the top 8 in the world. You know, even though Ricky hasn't been winning, he seems to always be near the top of the leaderboard every week. Oh, then you got, just the U.S. Open champion, Brooks Koepka, who's number 11. Long, strong, and a great putter. Boy, would he be a great far ball partner for like Kisner or somebody like that. That could be a really good, or maybe Matt Kuchar. Speaking of Kisner, he's number 24 in the world. He had a win this year, plus 8 top 10s, one of the most consistent, great foursome partner. Kuchar is 12th in the world. What can you say? The human ATM. No wins this year, but 9 top 10. He's always consistent. Again, a fabulous foursome partner. Then you got Patrick Reed, you know, Mr. Emotion. You know he's going to be fired up wearing the red, white, and blue stuff. Charlie Hoffman, 23rd in the world, has had by far the best year of his career. He's playing as well as anyone all year long. Daniel Berger's number 25. A little aggressive, sometimes inconsistent, but should do well in match play. He'd be a guy, again, you'd want in four ball, probably not in foursomes because he does spray a little bit. Kevin Chappell, he could be a good in either format, I think. He's number 26 in the world. So of your 12 guys, 11 of them are in the top 26. And then you throw Phil in, who's number 30. So you got all the players are in the top 30 in the world. You want to say Phil's old? Well, yeah, he's been around forever. But he's a mentor. He has the experience. He's a competitor of the most extreme. And he loves these team competitions. So you know he's going to be into it. So of these guys, you got 11. They account for 11 major championships. 101 PGA Tour wins. 10 of the 12 are in the top 25 in the world, and all are in the top 30. Plus 3 of these guys are under the age of 25. It's the first international team competition for Berger, Chappell, Kisner, and Hoffman. They may have kind of the deer in the headlights look the first couple of days. You know, the problem is, guys, the U.S. team is much stronger on paper. But the problem is they play the game on the field. So, you know, the last one turned out a lot closer than we ever imagined. Many of them have been runaways in the past, but this international team, you know, they're getting tired of getting smoked every time. So, you know, there's a thing, and they're getting some younger guys in there too, and maybe they'll get a turnaround. And, you know, we're going to talk about it a little bit, but it's been a long season. These guys have played a lot of golf in the last 2.5 months. So there might be a little bit of a letdown, a little bit of a fatigue factor too.
Could be. But like you say, I mean, they are loaded, the U.S. team. as I look at the U.S. team, I look at a loaded team, which features three of the four major champions from this year, Brooks Koepka, Jordan Spieth, and Justin Thomas, all young players in their 20s that will be the core or future President's Cup and Ryder Cup teams for years to come. Add to that other players that are on this year's team, like Ricky Fowler, Patrick Reed, and Daniel Berger, and you have a six-man strong foundation where to build a team, all of them under 20s. Add to that players like Xander Schauffele, who, like I've said, will be in the mix of the top players next year, Russell Henley, Tony Finau, and you can go nine deep easily. Another thing, they're all in their 20s. Others outside of that realm, but with good chances of developing and maybe challenging for those spots, are two of Fred's guys like Wesley Bryan and Bryson DeChambeau. I mean, I'm not saying that veterans will go away. I mean, Dustin Johnson is still in his prime at just 33. Matt Kuchar is 39 and still, like you said, you call him the human ATM. He keeps racking up top 10s. Kevin Kisner is 33. Kevin Chappell, 31. They're reaching their peak. Another guy that was left out but is climbing up the world rankings as well is Brian Harman, who's 30. And you have the other veterans like Webb Simpson, Jason Duffner, Zach Johnson, who are consistent players that could get in the mix any time. Hey, oh, by the way, Brent Snedeker and Jimmy Walker have been hampered by injuries and illness, but they're more than capable. So I'm not saying the veterans will go away, but that young core could be here for a long time, and it looks fabulous. When you look at the internationals and try to match that, their young core could be Hideki Matsuyama, Jason Day. Other than that, maybe Siwoo Kim, but not much depth to build on their future with those 20-somethings. As for Europe, for the Ryder Cup, there it gets good because you see Rory McIlroy, you have John Rahm, Thomas Peters, Tommy Fleetwood, Tyrrell Hatton, Matthew Fitzpatrick, about the 20-somethings. And then you add the veterans like Paul Casey, Alex Noren, Rafa Cabrera-Bello, Russell Knox, and Francesco Molinari among the 30-somethings that will be there for a while. And don't forget that Sergio Henrik and Justin Rose could be there. I mean, point is, Fred, the 20-something score, at least on paper, and what we see right now, is a stronger upper hand by the U.S. team against the international, and it makes for a sweet rivalry with Europe that will get even bigger because they have two also a strong core. Before getting to Kieran's take on that, especially in the European Ryder Cup side, what is your take on what I just expressed?
Oh, you're exactly right. You mentioned that to me over the weekend. We were texting back and forth, and I thought, oh, yeah, what a great point to talk about. I mean, you hit it right on the head. With the young guys that are developing and coming up on the PGA Tour, and, you know, Kieran had the stats there for us earlier in the show, it's phenomenal. And like I said, the nice thing about it is, these guys kind of actually like each other. I mean, they hang out together. You know, Koepka and Justin Thomas and Ricky Fowler, they're all right there. They're buddies down there in Florida. And then, they go on Thomas and Spieth and, you know, a couple other guys. They go on those spring breaks together with their girlfriends and stuff or wives. So, these guys all, they hang out together. You know, it's like back in the day, Davis Love, Freddie Couples, Paul Azinger, those guys hung out together all the time on tour. And those guys dominated in President's Cup. They were in the Ryder Cup, and they all got along very well. They all were the captains for a time, and they're still going through all that with Davis Love just getting done with the Ryder Cup. Freddie has been the President's Cup like forever, won like, what, five times or something. So, I really like this young bunch, Carlos, and they're going to be around for a while, barring injury, barring something happening. But the future is very good for international team play with the United States team.
How about that, Kieran?
Yeah, absolutely. I think in the end, you have so many young players in the U.S. right now. But they're also just so good. You know, they are all among the best players in the game. And they're all already so experienced. You have Spieth and Thomas, they're major champions. they are seasoned competitors. Ricky Fowler is still young, but been around forever. And obviously, other guys, Patrick Reed's there as well and whatnot, and they're all so good in this sort of format. And Fred's kind of right there in the sense that, particularly with the likes of Spieth and Thomas and so on, you have guys that like each other and they sort of embrace the whole kind of scene of being on the... Because in the end, those guys grew up watching the US being destroyed in the Ryder Cup. You know, really from, obviously, to the whole kind of turn of the century, barring 2008, when Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth were in their early teens when they were kids, they saw America get destroyed every time in the Ryder Cup. And they come in there and they're determined, they're competitors, they're quite likable personalities, but they are really tough competitors in the golf course, and they want to change that. And so in the end, to me, when it comes to the American team having greater success in the Ryder Cup and so on, it's nothing to do with this task force and all the changes that they made and having 65 vice captains. It's nothing to do with that. The reason the Americans are doing so much better now is because they have better players. And they're better players who are younger players, and they're hungry, they're not having scar tissue, they've come in here fresh, and they're winners. And that's why the American team is doing so much better, and that's why they'll dominate the international team this week, I think, and that's why I think they'll be very hard to beat for Europe next year in the Ryder Cup. I think they have such a strong core. But I think, generally speaking, internationally, for me, the international team, in terms of the President's Cup, the new young players are just kind of a generation, or maybe 2 or 3 years until they get here. And you see players like Cameron Smith or Ryan Ruffles from Australia, they are going to be exceptional players over the next 4 or 5 years. They're going to really push on to the PGA Tour and win big events. And when those guys get out into that stage, they'll play in the President's Cup team, and that's when you see that team become stronger. So I think for me, the international team, they haven't quite had their golden generation yet, but I do think it's coming. Right now, the U.S., they have a golden generation. These guys are the best, and they're going to be your mainstays in that team in this and in the Ryder Cup for years to come. And as long as they're there, they're going to be really hard to beat. Because like you said, Carlos, the likes of Xander Schauffele and those young guys who are kind of on the periphery, on the fringe, they're going to break into the Ryder Cup team next year and the President's Cup team the year after that. So they're kind of a revolving door of great players in the U.S. right now, which is really exciting for fans in America. But I do think the international team has some kind of gems who are just waiting to be unearthed. But I think, unfortunately for Nick Price, there's probably just a year to wait for him. However, I must quickly say, on the flip side, of an older player, when it comes to Phil Mickelson, here's a question for you both. Who's going to be the first captain on the President's Cup or the Ryder Cup to be brave enough not to pick Phil Mickelson? Who's it going to be? Tiger Woods, maybe?
That is a good question.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to do it. Nobody wants to have Tom Watson throw under the bus moment. No one wants that.
No kidding. That is a good question. Would Phil come and be an assistant captain? The only way that's going to happen is if he's hurt. And he's going to play another 5, 6, 7 years. I mean, he's just going to keep banging it out there unless he gets hurt and just can't do it. That's a good point.
Hey, just quickly to wrap up this, the season is really long, and they come now to the President's Cup. I know that Ryder Cup, everybody has their energy level because it's something different. But with the President's Cup, after this long year, and like we have said, it still doesn't have that standing that the Ryder Cup does. What do you think here, and how their energy level will be? I know a lot of them have injuries that try just to get through it and just to finish their FedEx Cup. But how about here playing at the President's Cup?
Yeah, I think in the end it's a similar situation with the Ryder Cup, where it's coming kind of later in the year. The guys have had a really busy summer, playing all the majors, playing into the FedEx Cup, and it's been a very long schedule. But in some ways, I actually think the President's Cup is a little bit different in the respect that it's a slightly more relaxed week. It does not have the same intensity as the Ryder Cup. There's not the same pressure on the players. I think they will enjoy each other's company this week as a group. And it'll be a little more relaxed in that respect. So, yeah, there'll be some kind of nagging injuries, and there'll be a bit of fatigue here or there. However, on the flip side, you know, as I said, so many of the American players, even though they've played a lot, they're all playing really well. And when you're playing well, you can kind of shake off any fatigue and you can keep carrying on. It's the guys who are not doing so well, who are kind of perhaps thinking, well, you know, I've had a long year, I want to go home now, and I've got to play in the President's Cup. So the guys who are perhaps not coming into this in not so great form, it might feel more of a chore for them to do it. And unfortunately for Nick Price, most of those players are actually on his who haven't played that well recently. So I think fatigue, these are young guys, you know, most of them, they're all hungry, they're enjoying each other's company out here, they'll enjoy being in a team, they want to win. I think in the end these guys will just have a good week nonetheless. I think in the end, the whole question of having a shorter schedule is something for the tour to look at, because in the end there's so many demands on the players internationally nowadays where golf doesn't have an off-season effectively. And I think for a lot of the top guys, they're finding it harder now to try and say no to things. And they have to, because they can't play every week, they can't be at every event, every sponsored deal or anything like that. They have to find time for themselves. So I think the question about fatigue is certainly there as we get towards kind of this wraparound season, that sort of thing. But in terms of the President's Cup, I think it's kind of a unique case where it's a different kind of pace. I think the players will enjoy it and embrace it. And if they're playing well, they'll have fun. And that can kind of push aside any fatigue. But for the guys who aren't playing so well, the guys who maybe want to go home and kind of try and work on their game, it might be a bit of a chore. And as I said, most of those players, unfortunately, for one side of this team, this match, are the international side. So I think fatigue, these guys are young, Carlos. They're hungry, ready to go. And Phil Mickelson, he didn't play last week, so he's ready to go too.
Hey, Fred, real quick, what's your take on that before we go to the final?
Yeah, I think there will be a little bit of letdown the first couple of rounds, but Stricker is going to get his young guys in the mix. But come Sunday when the singles, these guys are going to be ready to go. And like Kieran said, this is more like a buddy's trip. These guys are friends, and they kind of enjoy this kind of thing. And it gets the, you know, when they get out there on the course, the juices get to flowing, and they'll get with the program. So, yeah, it's a big deal. It's a big party. The wives and the significant others are there. A lot of ceremony and stuff. But, yeah, it should be fun. It should be great. Carlos, I want to mention, too, that everything starts on Friday at 11:35 on the golf coverage from 11:30 to 6 on the Golf Channel. That's the four balls on Saturday. They start at 8 a.m. with a live coverage on NBC, the foursomes in the morning. Then the afternoon, you've got the four balls, and they start at noon. And then, of course, the singles begin at noon on Sunday, and that's also on NBC.
And with that, we wrap up our coverage of the President's Cup. Let's go now to our final pods. As usual, I'll start them in the WC Metro Tour, which is the official qualifying tour for the LPGA. Will broadcast the final round of the WC Metro Tour Championship on Sunday, October 8th, to a worldwide live audience on Facebook Live. The broadcast will originate on the LPGA Tour's Facebook page. The broadcast will begin at 1 p.m. and run through the conclusion of the tournament and the card ceremony, where 10 players will become LPGA members. The broadcast will cover holes 14 through 18 on Sunday with a full-scale production truck and crew on site. This is the second time ever that the tour has broadcasted live on golf on Facebook Live. The final round of the Florida National Charity Classic to open the season was also broadcast on Facebook Live. I mean, between the two Facebook feeds, there were more than 60,000 views. That doesn't seem like much, but take into consideration the platform and that it was the first time, and you will see the potential that everybody is seeing on live streaming platforms. Also, a Pennsylvania high school golfer has defied huge odds by recording two holes in one in the same round. 17-year-old Parkland High School golfer Ben Tetzlaff accomplished the feat during a nine-hole practice round on Monday at Iron Lakes Country Club. The National Hole-in-One Registry calculated the odds of the feat at 67 million to one. He should go play the lotto. Parkland coach Scott Levin says he missed the first ace but saw the second when Teslav hit a 9-iron on the 140-yard sixth hole. Teslav had already sunk a gap wedge on the 104-yard hold, second hold. Kieran Teslav's career low round is a 76, which he shot at the Allentown Municipal Golf Course. He hopes to play golf in college. I guess if he keeps it up this way and continues improving, we could someday see him in the pros.
Well, absolutely, Carlos. And I must quickly say there that having two hole-in-ones in a round is a bit greedy, isn't it? I've never had one in my entire life, so give me one, please. Just give me one. I want one. Just say I've done it. So having two in nine holes is a bit, that's kind of having a bit much. And that's biting off more than you can chew. However, one person who I'm sure has had a few hole-in-ones in her career is Katrina Mathieu, who, of course, has just been named the European Solheim Cup captain for 2019. And we've actually just, of course, finished this year's Solheim Cup, so we're already getting set for the next one. And it perhaps shows you how kind of desperate the LET and so on needs the Solheim Cup, and that we're actually getting ready for it 2 years before. But Katrina Mathieu was really not a surprising name at all. She was pretty much guaranteed to be captain. The Solheim Cup's going to be, of course, in her home country of Scotland at Glen Eagles, where the Ryder Cup was a few years ago. And she obviously has a formidable resume. She's a nine-time Solheim Cup player who, of course, had to jump in for one last time as a player this year when Suzanne Pedersen pulled out due to injury. Katrina was her vice-captain. She took Suzanne's place in the team and was exceptional. She rolled back the years, and she kind of concluded her playing career in the Solheim Cup and sparked the match, even though her team were quite comfortably beaten. But Katrina obviously has an amazing career, a former major champion, very widely respected, and she was the obvious choice to be a Solheim Cup captain. But I must always say about the Solheim Cup captaincy for Europe is, and I've always wondered this question, and I think, I'm not sure it's really her sort of scene, but I've always wondered, why has Dame Laura Davies never been the Solheim Cup captain? She's the greatest player from Europe of our generation, a Solheim Cup legend, a great personality, and she hasn't been the captain. Maybe it will never happen, but perhaps Laura Davies is actually going to be the women's equivalent of Sandy Lyle and never actually becoming the captain. However, Katrina Mathieu, it's hard to argue with that, and being the captain on a home country and home soil, that will certainly drive attention and will make the Solheim Cup at Glen Eagles in 2 years' time a very big event, I'm sure. So that's one to look forward to and mark on the calendar. But we're a long, long way away from that. So, Fred, you'll still be hanging on by then, I'm sure, in 2 years' time. But we will be here with you. So that's 2019. So mark it down.
I'm waiting for 2021, Kieran. It's going to be right here in my backyard. Matter of fact, I'm going to Inverness tomorrow.
That's a bit optimistic, I think. I'm not sure we'll get that far, but we can see.
I'll be there. Hey, guys, moving on, a couple of Trump courses, four Trump courses, as a matter of fact, in the New York area were vandalized with slogans critical of the administration etched into putting greens. Police already have a suspect in custody. Nine greens at Ferry Point, Hudson Valley, Westchester, and Bedminster were damaged in similar acts of vandalism, according to a person familiar with the incident. So they got that under control, but that's unfortunate. And then for my last thing real quickly, yesterday, September 25th, marked the one-year anniversary of the passing of golf's greatest ambassador, Arnold Palmer, and golf fans still remember the king fondly. Golf's greatest will be long remembered, and the current crop of professional tour golfers should thank him every day for the ability to play for the large purses and the media attention they receive. The PGA Tour has announced they will issue commemorative pins celebrating the life and contributions Arnie made to golf at this week's President's Cup. As part of the 2017 President's Cup, members of both teams, volunteers, and staff, more than 1,500 people, will receive the pins featuring the silhouette of Arnold. So if you want to contribute, his work is still going on. The philanthropic work is still going on. If you want to contribute to that, you can go to www.arniesarmy.org. That's arniesarmy.org. Send them a little bit of money. Really helps medical assistance for women and children. It's good stuff. So that's all I have tonight, Carlos. Thank you.
And since we have like 1 minute before we start closing the show, I have here a trivia question that was sent to me via text right now, and he wants me to ask you guys because I already know the answer. He gave it to me. It's I would be cheating if I would say it. But anyway, who was the last person to win both the Player of the Year and the Vair Trophy on the LPGA in the same year?
Ochoa, was it? Lorena Ochoa?
No. Fred?
Well, no, I thought I did Stacy win the Vair when she was the Player of the Year?
That is correct. Stacy Lewis.
Fred, oh,
yeah.
Well done, Fred.
2014.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, last
year. And hey, a point.
Ochoa did it before. Ochoa did it before. So you were right also. Okay.
Oh,
how about
thank
that?
You.
Hey, I have to mention.
Thank you.
I have to mention, too, Kieran, when you talk about Meg Mallon going to the Hall of Fame tonight, she did play golf at Ohio State University. I just had to get that in.
I didn't show the ghost. Anyway, Back Niners, that wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to our European golf gurus, colleague and friend, Kieran Clark. Excellent, as usual. Thank you for being with us. A wealth of information. Thank you very much. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio. Or if you missed it, check it out on iTunes or tune in. Also on Roku TV. And if you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Kieran Clark and Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Cheers.
Has this ever happened to you? You put some money in a savings account with a great rate. But that promotional savings rate came crashing down. You deserve better. Take just 5 minutes and open a Capital One savings account online. You'll get one of the nation's best rates that's not a promotional rate. Welcome to Banking Reimagined. What's in your wallet?
For consumers only. Offered by Capital One N.A. member FDIC. Copyright 2017 Capital One.